count balance on his phone and feels an overwhelming gratitude for the incredible abundance that he and his family enjoy. He backs out of the driveway to go create even more abundance by providing value and serving others. He feels an exhilarating optimism and knows that although life may throw a curveball at him today, he is perfectly equipped to take on any challenge. Man number two opens the door to his sedan and is reminded that it isn't the car he wanted. He looks at the gas gauge and feels distraught that the gas is so low. He hopes there's enough gas to get to work and then wonders if he can even afford to buy gas before his next payday. His bank account balance reveals that he has enough for gas, but that's about it. Just another reminder of his pointless job where he works for pennies. He pulls out of the driveway wondering how little he can get away with doing at the office. He wonders what will go wrong during the day, because something always does. Now, these two men have many similarities, and yet what different lives they lead. Both men are married with children and are homeowners. Both wake up in the morning to prepare for a workday and go through their respective morning routines. Both say goodbye to their families, get into their vehicles, and drive to work. But that's about where the similarities end. The differences, however, abound. One man has a beautiful home, while the other has a home in need of desperate repair. Man number one has a fit body, while man number two is overweight and unhappy about that fact and is unwilling to take action to change it. Man number one is living his dream life. Man number two despises his job and seemingly his entire life. Man number two echoes the feelings of a large percentage of today's workforce who feel underpaid and underappreciated. Man number one views his wife's role in the home quite differently than man number two does, and he also seems to have a sharply different opinion of his children. Man number one is disciplined and interested in doing what's required to be successful. Man number two is interested in doing what he must to survive. Both men seem to think that prayer is important, but for very different reasons. For man number one, the shower is an opportunity. For man number two, it's a nuisance. They even feel differently when it comes to their children using their ties as wearable napkins. Man number one chooses a healthy breakfast and a healthy attitude about fixing food for his family. Man number two wants to shovel sugary cereal into his face and get the heck out of Dodge. When man number one looks at his bank account, he feels security and abundance. Man number two suffers under the weight of lack and want, but he seems unwilling to change his fate. Man number one is clearly an optimist who believes life really is a glass half full and in many cases overflowing. Man number two is a pessimist and a skeptic. Well, he'd probably call himself a realist who thinks that life is one cruel glass half empty joke. Who are these two men who seem to live such different lives? They are both me. I have been both of these men at different points in my life. Unfortunately, man number two's thoughts and actions are the ones I most closely mirrored. That is before I discovered the eternal and life-altering power of gratitude. The conversion from being ungrateful to being someone who lives with the constant companion of gratitude has been a lengthy and difficult one. I wish I'd had a mentor who helped me through the process, some gentle soul who would have left breadcrumbs for me along the way. There was no gentle soul or wise mentor. Life itself, with its hardships and trials, was my cold and relentless teacher. Nonetheless, I'm left to wonder, what if I could have had someone to guide me through the journey toward becoming man number one? What I'm sharing with you in this book is what I wish someone would have shared with me. I'm not going to simply give you platitudes like, be more thankful, or just have an attitude of gratitude. I'm not going to give you overused suggestions that frankly rarely work for most people, or say things like, keep a gratitude journal, or just go on a gratitude walk. I'm going to give you substance. I'm going to share with you real information and a real formula that will virtually guarantee your success. How did I come to realize the importance of gratitude and learn how to make it an actionable game changer in my life? Keep listening, my friends. The next chapter will enlighten you. Real quick, before I move on to the next chapter, I wanted to give you a little bit of background. That thing that I just read, A Tale of Two Men, was the very first thing I ever wrote for this book. I felt inspired one night on a long drive to take out my iPhone and start typing that on my notes app, and I ultimately created something that became a huge foundation for the book. I hope as you re-listen to it, or if you have the hard copy of the book as you read it, that you realize that both of those men are exactly the same because they're me. It's different times in my life as I was reacting to things differently. It goes back to this idea that Patros taught Jacob, that it's about choice and how we choose in the moment. But I wanted you to just have that background, that A Tale of Two Men was the first thing I wrote, and frankly, the first thing that helped me understand, really truly understand, what it was that gratitude had done in my life to be a complete and total game changer. So now that I gave that to you, let's move on to chapter 2. Chapter 2, From Out of the Depths. There was a time in my life when I knew I'd hit rock bottom. You know when you've reached it, because rock bottom is that unmistakable moment when you find the power and the strength you've been lacking to change your today and go on to create a better tomorrow. To better explain my rock bottom, we need to back up a few years from that moment and discover together where it all went horribly wrong. Searching for something outside the walls. In 2007, I sat in a gray-walled cubicle in Salt Lake City, and that's about how I felt. Just gray. After ending my sparkling and rewarding career as a glorified telemarketing associate, where I'd worked for a large mortgage and auto finance company, I was now working as an independent mortgage broker. It wasn't the most exciting job in the world, but I needed it to pay the bills and support my soon-to-be wife and the family we were thinking of starting. I was still a glorified telemarketing associate, but now I had a license that allowed me to take those phone calls I was making and turn them into real cash with mortgage refinances. This one particular day, as I sat in my ergonomically correct chair, staring at the gray walls of my cubicle, I decided to take a departure from the stale phone leads I had sitting on my desk and get busy by hustling up some fresh mortgage leads. I called a good friend who was active in the real estate business and told him if he needed help facilitating any of his loans, I might be able to provide some answers. He politely declined, but he got back in touch with me a short time later about another matter entirely. He and another good friend of mine were considering starting a business together. They were having a meeting later in that week to discuss it, and they asked if I'd be interested in meeting with them to consider a new business venture. Listen, any future that didn't involve cubed monochrome walls sounded good to me, and so I decided to go. I instantly caught a vision of something that had the potential to be so massive that there was no way I wasn't going to get involved. And it was literally a matter of days before the three of us were in business together. We soon opened the doors of REIC, which stood for Real Estate Investors Club. After a few years, we rebranded ourselves as Strongbrook before expanding our company nationally. If you've ever been involved in a new business, you know that it takes a constant application of the principles of success and abundance in order to actually see the business succeed past the growing pains. And that's where I ran into my first big problem. I was an entitled brat who was filled with excuses and negativity. And worst of all, I didn't even know it. Victimhood and a lack of personal accountability were the prevailing factors guiding my mindset as I entered this ownership agreement with my friends. The way I interacted with life was a far cry from actual reality, but because I had never been taught a different way of thinking, the negativity I chose to see was the only reality I knew. Pause real quick, jump off script. You gotta understand, I was exactly like most people, just like man number two, suffering from the poverty of endless discontentment, not even knowing what was really around me, and so I just looked at what was around me, and if it wasn't good enough because I didn't have gratitude, I just complained about it, and I didn't ever want to take accountability. Everything was somebody else's fault, because if it was my fault, that meant I actually had power to change it, but I didn't want to change it, and so there I was in this really kind of bad place. Now to get back to the book. You see, a virus has a way of making everything around it sick. And this virus of the mind that I was afflicted with had taken up a permanent home in my brain. But because it was completely oblivious to it, I did nothing to destroy or even treat the virus during those pivotal years of our company's founding. After a few painful and telling experiences, when it became crystal clear that my business partners and some of our clients had been hurt by my attitude and actions, or better said, lack of action, I realized that I needed to make some changes. By the way, if you want to hear the compelling story of one of those pivotal moments in the early days of our company's founding, visit kevinclayson.com and click on the Entrepreneur Fire podcast link. It's right down at the bottom on the left. Go to episode 521 and you'll be able to hear a story of one of those moments for me where I realized, holy cow, something needs to shift. I actually do talk about gratitude on that podcast too. Interesting side note, the conversation I have on that podcast on Entrepreneur on Fire on episode 521 was a huge part of the beginning of writing this book. You'll see in that episode, we talk about gratitude, and I had no intention on talking about gratitude in that episode, and it became a huge piece of the evolution of what's now the book you're listening to. All right, back to the script. Eradicating the virus. By 2009, I had embarked upon a much-needed personal development journey. I began reading and listening to countless books and programs, and I invested money I didn't have into seminars, mentors, and online courses because I knew that unless I invested both time and money into myself, I would never become the success I'd always hoped to become. Those dollars and that time were the most valuable investments I've ever made. One of the most life-changing events I attended was the Big Money Speaker Boot Camp in the summer of 2010. This event was put on by a man I would later hire to be my personal coach and mentor, ABC's Secret Millionaire and two-time College Speaker of the Year, and co-author of Chicken Soup for the College Soul, James Malinchak. Thanks to James, his content, and his straightforward approach to the speaking business and the business of being an author, I started to believe that I too could train and speak, and maybe I could even write a book one day. I guess I did. With my newfound knowledge and increased self-belief, I asked my partners if they would take a risk and let me do some speaking and training for our company. They agreed, and you won't believe what happened. I was actually pretty good at it. My messages resonated with audiences, and I found myself using my newfound skill set to train and teach our employees as well, and we saw our company culture shift and overall company contentment and production increase. At that time, our company had grown to over 50 employees, and I was starting to become known as the go-to voice of inspiration, beacon of hope, and a source of wisdom inside of the walls of our company. I quickly became Strong Brooks' most requested speaker nationwide and was soon jet-setting from coast to coast to give keynote presentations, deliver workshops, and make cameo appearances as an owner and co-founder of a revolutionary company. I even created a few talks that I was occasionally asked to give to other growing companies in the area. There I was, speaking, inspiring, and getting compensated to give talks. I was starting to feel more confident in my abilities and knowledge. I also felt I was making more personal progress, and I was certainly experiencing more success, really, than ever before. Riding that high lasted for about a year. That is, until we made a single hiring decision that changed my life. The man we hired, let's call him Frank, became our new marketing director. Little did I know that I would allow this one hiring decision to derail everything I'd started to accomplish. The downward spiral. Frank was a guy who knew his stuff. He had already experienced some massive success at a young age. And when we brought him on, he quickly put us on the path to starting a new company inside our existing Strong Brook umbrella. In 2010, we created a direct sales side of our company called Strong Brook Direct. This new enterprise and what would eventually become thousands of independent reps was tasked to market and promote our real estate products across the country using a multi-level network marketing type framework. Frank was instrumental in helping us set up, establish, and oversee this new direct sales and network marketing arm, and for that reason, we moved him into the position of managing director of Strong Brook Direct. Although my partners and I were involved in the running of all areas of our business, Frank ultimately had autonomy inside this new division. And in the beginning, he was utilizing me as the primary trainer and speaker. I traveled across the country to speak to our growing team of independent sales reps. At first, all the traveling and speaking felt exhilarating. I was excited to work alongside Frank and my fellow founders to make this division the most profitable arm our company had ever seen. But, you probably guessed it, my excitement was short-lived. A few months after he started working with us, Frank and I began to butt heads. We never seemed to see eye to eye on anything. There was an uncomfortable and really palpable tension between us, and it exploded into full-volume shouting matches on a number of occasions. The tension and dislike between us transcended business and became personal. At one point, Frank shouted at me that he was offended by the love I expressed for my wife on social media. His words were something like, "It's really sad that your relationship with your wife is so bad that you can't even tell her you love her in person." By the way, that's not a real impression. That's just kind of how I seem to hear and remember it in my head at this point. Well, things got even nastier, and I chose to become angry and hurt, especially after what felt like a series of personal attacks. I got loud, he got loud, and pretty soon we could scarcely stand to be in the same room together. As a result of our increasing differences, Frank felt like he could not trust me to be a valid contributor of any kind. And look, listen, in Frank's defense, I'd proven to him time and time again that I had not dealt with my deep-seated sense of entitlement and victim's mentality. Even after finding success in our business, I had yet to purge these attitudes from my life, and consequently they would surface at inopportune times. I became an active participant in the destruction of our relationship. I would pretend I respected Frank in public, but in private, I berated and criticized him to anyone who would listen. Not my best moment. By the end of 2011, I was utterly miserable. It was a gradual shift that took place over the course of many months, but as I reflect back, it feels as though it all turned on a dime. I went from feeling needed and successful to feeling unappreciated and marginalized. Perhaps even worse, it was as if all of that personal development I'd experienced had never even taken place. I was once again full of complaints and had reverted back to my role as the poor persecuted victim. I was no longer acting like an owner or a founder of the company. I again adopted an employee mindset, meaning I showed up, I did as little as possible, and I expected a paycheck anyway. If I was not speaking and traveling, I found myself bitter, resentful, discontent, and somehow I devolved back to the man from 4 years earlier who did not want to do much work, but who had this insatiable desire to be recognized for what he perceived as his many contributions. Through a combination of fatigue from constant travel and the proliferated exhaustion I felt due to the fact that our baby boy Braxton did not understand the concept of sleeping through the night at the time, I'd become unbelievably depressed, fatigued, and unsatisfied. I was right on my way to the bottom. Each morning, I'd wake up feeling exhausted and resentful. I didn't want to get out of bed and face my thankless job or Frank. I'd spend many mornings sitting on the shower floor wondering how I was supposed to get through the day. I had no desire to engage in personal development or success training of any kind, and I spent every free moment mindlessly watching Netflix, sports, or reality TV. If I wasn't engaging in soul-numbing entertainment, I was on social media pretending life was peachy. I was a mildly attentive father, but I really relished my alone time. I was a difficult man to live with, so quick to become angry at insignificant things because of the self-imposed stress I was experiencing. My colleagues all became idiots for not seeing my potential. My car wasn't good enough. My house wasn't good enough. No matter how much money was in the account, I would stare at the balance and feel a tremendous amount of scarcity. Sound familiar? Yeah, this is the point in my life when I became man number two from A Tale of Two Men. Welcome to rock bottom. One day, after another routinely dreadful morning, I sat in my car looking at our office and thinking, I do not want to go in there. I hate my job. I can't stand Frank. I don't make enough money. I'm so underutilized. Should I leave the company? Would I even be missed? What's the point of all this anyway? Is this really my life? This can't be my life. And there it was. I had finally reached it. I was at rock bottom. As I mentioned, I believe rock bottom is the moment when you finally find the power and the strength you've always been lacking to change your today and go on to create a better tomorrow. I knew I couldn't get any lower, and at that moment, I realized that all of the training, coaching, reading, and inspiring I'd engaged in just a few years earlier had not disappeared completely. I started to sense something deep within. There was still a tiny spark of hope that things could get better. That internal spark was like a smothered flame that just needed a little air. And as soon as I realized the spark was there, it was as if someone poured kerosene on it. I started to think, well, if my circumstances won't change, maybe I can change the way I look at my circumstances. And maybe as a result, they actually will change. It seemed half crazy, and part of me doubted it would work. But almost as soon as I flipped that internal switch and began questioning the way I was looking at things, some of the powerful coaching I'd received years earlier came flooding back into my mind. During that Big Money Speaker Bootcamp I attended in 2010, I'd heard a man speak named Darren Hardy. Darren's a success mentor to CEOs and high-performance achievers, as well as an accomplished speaker and a best-selling author. You could check him out at darrenhardy.com. That talk he gave that day would end up changing my life 2 years after I'd heard it. Darren had discussed how small daily actions could compound into big results. He planted the seed that day, and I scrambled around to find the notes I'd taken during his talk. I found the notes. And as I opened my journal and looked at the notes, right there on the page, I'd written this sentence. It said, quote, pick a frustration I have and keep a gratitude journal about that thing for 21 days. Real quick, jump off script. I have no idea why I forgot the language of English when I wrote that sentence. Pick a frustration I have and keep a gratitude journal about that thing for 21 days. Yeah, that's being articulate. Thanks so much. Back to the book. As I read that, the word gratitude jumped off the page at me and caused me to rethink everything I was currently going through. I recalled Darren's story about how he kept a gratitude journal for his wife and then gave it to her after a year of compiling entries. In 2010, I thought, man, that sounded like a great idea, and at the time, I even kept a gratitude journal myself. Sadly, I never stuck with it. But now, 2 years later, maybe this was the time to start again. I thought if I started writing something down every day in a journal, maybe such an act would be enough to change the way I viewed my circumstances. Why gratitude journaling didn't work for me. Not long after I decided to start a journal for the second time, fear flooded my consciousness. I felt that little flame almost go out. I thought, wait, this can't be the answer. The act of journaling and trying to feel gratitude for the things in my life had not worked once before, so why is it going to work now? The overused Einstein quote kind of came to mind. You know, it's the one that defines insanity as doing the same thing but expecting a different result. I already felt bad enough. I didn't want to add insanity to the mix. Even so, there was still something inside me that told me not to dismiss this whole gratitude thing, at least not yet. That's when I decided to diagnose why the journal didn't work for me. If I could figure out where things broke down, maybe I could create a new path around the breakdown and move forward. After I heard Darren Hardy speak 2 years before, I purchased 2 gratitude journals, one for my wife and one for my daughter. I faithfully wrote in those journals for about 2 weeks, recounting what I loved and appreciated about the 2 girls in my life. At the time, I did not realize my mistake. Upon reflection, I came to realize that I was just writing about the things that were already good. As a result, it didn't produce any kind of massive internal shift, so I didn't stick with it. In fact, I let the practice go dormant long before it became a habit. The idea of gratitude still held no real power for me. At the time, it was nothing more than feeling sort of thankful for good stuff every now and then. I still did not understand the one singular truth about gratitude that would make the difference. During my first gratitude journaling attempt, I was simply hoping to feel a little more thankful. I was operating under the mistaken idea that gratitude was just some emotional thingy. And you know what? That was not going to cut it. My gratitude breakthrough. Passively journaling about something that already made me feel good was not going to be enough. I was at rock bottom, and I was not interested in staying there, so I chose to try something different. I made a recurring task in my iPhone to remind me every morning at 8 a.m. to, quote, feel gratitude today. Nice idea, right? There was a problem. The reminder would pop up on my task list for each day. I don't know how you interact with your to-do lists, but I am really skilled at procrastinating when it comes to mine. What I had effectively done was turn feeling gratitude into a job. Even though my new approach wasn't perfect, it seemed to be working better than the gratitude journal, so that was at least a plus. I was choosing to seek gratitude more often, but there were still days when I just couldn't get around to feeling any gratitude at all. I decided to change up my strategy and try something a little different. Next, I tried finding something to be thankful for the moment my alarm buzzed. I'd look around the instant my reminder sounded and search for something to be thankful for in that moment. Maybe it was my wife, maybe it was my kids, maybe it was that I woke up at all that day. Didn't matter. I just tried to find something. Well, I started making more progress, but I was not satisfied with the velocity of my personal and emotional recovery from rock bottom. I still wasn't activating gratitude. Rather, I was casually waiting for some moment when I could feel gratitude. I decided to go back to my notes from Darren Hardy's talk and see if there was any additional information that could give me some much-needed guidance. It was then that I discovered the secret. I once again saw that line that had sparked this whole gratitude experiment in the first place. This time, when I read the sentence, a different word popped off the page. Pick a frustration I have and keep a gratitude journal about that thing for 21 days. I instantly fixated on the word frustration. Maybe that was the key. I decided to look for a frustration, and whenever it showed up, I would consciously feel gratitude in that moment for that frustration, or at least attempt to find gratitude in that frustration. Cracking the code. I began to pick one frustrating or difficult experience, take a moment, reflect on it, and then find a way to feel gratitude for something embedded within that frustration, or at least try to become thankful for what I learned from the experience. Here's a few examples. One day, a flying rock chipped the windshield of my new car and subsequently caused a big crack. I thought, at least the whole windshield didn't shatter and I'm still safe. Another example, my baby wrote with crayon on our white walls and I thought, you know, it's okay. I'm just thankful the little guy is healthy and curious. Besides, I'm going to look at the crayon on this wall one day and wish he were still that age. Another example, I woke up in the morning and stubbed my toe on the bed, and I decided to be thankful that I had a bed at all. I didn't have to sleep on the floor last night, and I had a roof over my head. That was good enough. Another example, a car cut me off, and I squashed my road rage. I thought, I'm so thankful he didn't clip me and we avoided an accident. Plus, who knows what he or she is personally going through? It's no big deal because I'm safe, and I hope this person gets to his or her destination safely. Another example, Frank would make a snide remark at work, and I would think, I'm really thankful he's here, because it means I don't have to do his job and mine, and I can focus on something that brings me more joy. Each time after discovering and acknowledging a frustration, I located something I could feel grateful for embedded within the frustration. Then I would choose to pause for a moment and actually experience gratitude for it. Life began to transform before my eyes. No longer was I taking one little frustration and milking it all day so I could go home and seek sympathy from my wife and kids by saying, "Wow, look at how rough I had it today. Pity me." I'd finally stopped focusing on the tiny frustrations that are so common, which meant that each step got a little lighter and each day felt a little more hopeful. I was starting to experience what my friend Hal Elrod calls soulful gratitude, which is the kind of gratitude where you feel real, palpable emotion move inside of you. I began to see that if I didn't let the little frustrations alter my mood in the course of the day, I was far more likely to take the bigger problems and life-altering events in stride, and maybe even find gratitude for the big stuff. And a verb is born. So that was it. The big secret that was hiding under my nose the entire time. Let's review the one step that was missing from my previous attempts to feel more grateful. On second thought, I need to make something perfectly clear before we continue. If you don't understand this idea, this entire book will be pointless. So stand up, do a couple jumping jacks, wake up and get ready because you've got to get this. Are you ready? Drum roll, please. Brrr. You can make gratitude an active daily occurrence. Not by being grateful for the stuff that's already good, but by finding the good embedded within the bad and becoming thankful for that. Once I realized this truth, it became my guiding process to create more happiness, contentment, control, and success. I started to feel gratitude fueling my life. It was by going through an internal process of finding a frustration and activating gratitude for the frustration that I began to call it flipping the gratitude switch, and that is how the flip formula was born. I had stumbled upon a secret switch that we all have, a switch that can immediately illuminate all of life's challenges and shine light in the dark places of our lives. And that's when it dawned on me. If I can flip a single moment, it could change the trajectory of my day. If I can flip enough days, it could change the trajectory of my week. If I can flip enough weeks, it could change the trajectory of my month. Months turn into years, and years turn into a lifetime. I had cracked the code to never having a bad day again. Once I discovered the power of gratitude, I began searching for the definitive guidebook or some sort of how-to manual on thankfulness. But I was unable to find the right guide to help me navigate the process. There are about a billion or so gratitude journals on Amazon, lots of books on the scientific and positive effects of gratitude, and about a million more books that mention how gratitude is a big key to success and happiness and wealth. But I still couldn't find what I really needed. The secret sauce that I discovered seemed to be missing from everyone else's happiness recipes. I'd been searching for, but unable to locate, the most important truth about tapping into the eternal and unlimited power of gratitude. Gratitude is an action, not an emotion. Gratitude is something you do, not just something you feel. Through this whole learning process, gratitude became something I actively started doing daily, regularly, even hourly, and that is what caused life to really change for me. I finally abandoned the thought that gratitude was a noun, and I embraced the fact that gratitude was an active, powerful, and exciting verb. Chapter 3. There's a new verb in town. Doing versus feeling. I want to make sure you understand the key idea that gratitude is a verb and not the traditional Webster dumbed down version of it being a thing. We need to eradicate this ludicrous idea that gratitude is just some little thing you feel. We need to stop thinking of gratitude as a touchy-feely emotion that washes over us from time to time. We also need to stop thinking that gratitude is just a sensation we get when things go well. Gratitude is something you do, not just something you feel. You deserve to experience all the happiness, fulfillment, joy, and control you want in life. The rest of this book will help you do exactly that if you will let it. There is, however, some critical information that you must possess if you are ever to truly wrap your mind and heart around what gratitude really is. One of my favorite quotes on gratitude is given by a man I highly respect named Dieter F. Uchtdorf. He says, "It is easy to be grateful for things when life seems to be going our way. But what then of those times when what we wish for seems to be far out of reach? Could I suggest that we see gratitude as a disposition, a way of life that stands independent of our current situation? In other words, I'm suggesting that instead of being thankful for things, we focus on being thankful in our circumstances, whatever they may be." I love that quote, and I love this idea of being thankful in our current circumstances, whatever they may be, because it indicates that gratitude is something we must do during life's frustrations, not just something we feel when everything is going well. Gratitude, therefore, is not a noun or an emotion like many people think it is. Gratitude is something we can control, something we can activate, and something we can trigger. In short, gratitude is a verb. I discovered that the secret to using gratitude to change my life was to view it as an action. Let the verbification begin. In order to make gratitude an active participant in my life, it needed to become like doing a push-up or a sit-up. Gratitude needed to become something that may be hard to do in the moment, but by choosing to exercise it anyway, it could strengthen me. The process was not easy at first, but with the constant and consistent exercising of my gratitude muscles, the weight of life's trials and tribulations became much easier to bear. Part of the reason most people haven't been able to see gratitude for the true key to happiness that it can be is because we've been taught that gratitude is a noun, more specifically a thing. A thing is something we casually refer to and perhaps use from time to time. For most people, gratitude has been a thing, like a trash can or gum on the bottom of our shoe is a thing. It's this thing or feeling that exists that we interact with as the occasion calls for it. The problem with things is that we pay attention to them only when they are relevant to us in specific moments. This makes such things easy to forget after we use them. Gratitude is not a thing like a boy band or celebrity gossip is a thing. Gratitude is not a thing like the latest viral funny cat video is a thing. Gratitude is not a thing that goes out of style over time like a pair of bell bottoms, a Molly Ringwald movie, or a Sony Walkman. Anybody born after 1990 is like, what's a Sony Walkman? Gratitude is not some personal development fad or mystical secret that will sweep the nation for a brief period before it fades into the background. Gratitude will never go out of style. Gratitude is not some personal development fad or mystical secret that will sweep the nation for a brief period before it fades into the background. Gratitude will never go out of style. It's important for gratitude to become a sustainable movement, not a fad. It needs to become an all-consuming swell in our collective consciousness. And most importantly, if gratitude is going to become a movement, it has to contain action. Movement implies action. Actions are described by verbs, and that, my friends, is why gratitude is a verb. The way to access the unlimited and unrestrained power of gratitude in your life is by making it an actionable event. To help explain this, I'm now going to make up a word. You ready? Here we go. Verbify. The act of turning a noun into a verb by applying a massive amount of conscious effort and thought to the aforementioned noun with the specific purpose of changing the very nature of how you interact and understand said noun. Hashtag Webster skills. Listen, we need to verbify gratitude. Yes, we're making up a word. It's verbify. And I'm telling you, let's verbify gratitude. Shedding pounds of discontentment. When I started to enact gratitude in this way, when I verbified it in my life and acknowledged that its real power was found by initiating it and making it actionable, it was kind of like intensifying a workout routine in order to lose weight more quickly. Maybe you've tried to lose weight before and thought, if I walk a little more every day, I could accelerate my results. After all, there's no doubt you'll burn more calories if you exercise for longer periods of time. But what if you started jogging for the same amount of time that you'd spent walking? If I were to walk for 30 minutes at a 2.0 mile an hour pace, I'd burn a little over 100 calories. However, if I were to run for 30 minutes at a 6 mile an hour pace, I would burn around 400 calories. Walking and running are similar actions, require the same equipment, you know, your body and some shoes, and can each be performed for exactly the same amount of time. But are you going to lose weight more quickly by walking for a half an hour or running for the same amount of time? Running will shed the weight faster, right? If you are carrying around 10, 25, or even 100 pounds of discontentment and why me attitudes about life, then consider the flip formula to be the fastest and most effective way to shed all that unwanted mind fat. Consider this book, Marathon Training for Your Brain. What the flip? Flipping the gratitude switch is a description of what I believe we can do on the inside to change the trajectory of any given moment and deliver unrestrained joy and control in our lives. Flipping the gratitude switch is the verbification that gratitude needs in order to become the game changer for you that it has become for me. When I refer to flipping the gratitude switch, you'll notice that I capitalize the first half of the letters in the word flipping. This is because FLIP, F-L-I-P, is an acronym that represents the four steps of the FLIP formula. Flipping the gratitude switch is a process that I was using long before I turned the idea into a teachable formula. In the beginning, I knew I'd stumbled upon some sort of happiness life hack, but I wasn't sure how I could explain what was happening inside. I just knew I was turning on or flipping what felt like a switch inside of me when life handed me frustrations. Thanks to coaches, family, and friends, I found a way to create and articulate the formula with the help of the phrase I'd been using all along to describe what I'd been feeling. So buckle up for an accelerating journey of awesome, and let's get to flippin'. Chapter 4, Let's Get to Flippin'. According to a recent Harris poll, one-third of us are, well, kind of miserable. The study was conducted using a series of questions to determine Americans' level of contentment and life satisfaction. The study found 33% of those polled did not consider themselves to be, quote-unquote, very happy. They cited potential causes such as deteriorating economic conditions, rising college tuition costs, mounting debt, and increasing levels of underemployment and unemployment. Regardless of what was causing the lack of happiness, I was shocked that so few people found happiness in their current situations. Did you ever read Winnie the Pooh stories or watch the cartoons as a child? If you have kids of your own, you probably read Winnie the Pooh stories to them or watched Pooh altogether. And if you're familiar with that honey-loving bear, then you probably also know Eeyore. Eeyore is one sad donkey. He sees things from a glass is totally empty perspective. He also suffers from the complete inability to experience pleasure from activities most other people find enjoyable. Or in his case, maybe most other donkeys find enjoyable. Even his home in the 100-acre woods is officially named Eeyore's gloomy place, rather boggy and sad. From where I sit, it seems that we are a nation, and really a human family, full of way too many Eeyores. We have a tendency to expect the worst, think negatively, and constantly speak words of pessimism into our lives. I say it's time to shift our collective focus and stop being sad, old gray asses, donkeys. I think Alfred D. Sousa summed it up best when he said, "For a long time, it seemed to me that life was about to begin, real life. But there was always some obstacle in the way, something to be gotten through first, some unfinished business, time to still be served, a debt to be paid. Then life would begin. At last it dawned on me that these obstacles were my life. This perspective has helped me to see that there's no way to happiness. Happiness is the way." Look, let's just be frank. Life is challenging, okay? At times there seems to be a nonstop barrage of challenges. And now that we've gotten that inconvenient truth out of the way, we can move past it and start finding joy in life. And not just in the life you think you want, but in the life you are living right now. A modern epidemic. Whether or not you would have answered unhappy in the Harris poll, you could stand to be a little happier, right? Would you say no to a little more joy in your life? After all, we spend our lives chasing what we are sure will make us happy, and yet so few of us seem to find it. Whether it is at work, in school, or in our relationships, we're always searching for the latest, greatest thing that will bring us satisfaction and contentment. In fact, we're so busy trying to find ways to be happy that we don't have time to ever learn how to actually be happy. Many of you don't know it, but right now, right where you sit, you have been afflicted with a deadly disease. Are you ready for it? It's tragic, and it's called waiting for the futuritis. We spend a lifetime thinking the next job will be the one that will finally let us get ahead. We spend a lifetime thinking, if I can just get that promotion, everything will finally be better. We think we have to increase our income before we can live a life of freedom. We think that the next car will be the one that we want, and the next house will be our dream house. We don't realize that with a little applied effort, happiness can be found right this moment. In fact, if you cannot find happiness in this exact moment, then I promise you that no amount of money, no lifestyle change, no relationship, no award, and no life circumstance could ever bring you the happiness you seek. You need to take control of your life this instant and choose to become happy. And gratitude is the fastest and most tangible way to do just that. Clearly, the widely accepted practice of waiting for the latest, greatest thing to show up in our lives is simply not working. Now, I'm not saying we should abandon hope that, you know, something better will come, or that the next job will pay more, or that the next home will be our dream home. It's appropriate and important to dream and hope, but, and this is the key, you ready for this? There is a difference between always living in the future and hoping life will get better someday, and beginning to live in the present and acknowledging that life is pretty great right now. It's what Dieter F. Uchtdorf described in The Difference Between Being Thankful in Your Current Circumstances, whatever they may be, and being thankful for the things you can already acknowledge as good in your life. By making gratitude an action, by verbifying it, we can begin experiencing gratitude, happiness, joy, fulfillment, and then we can begin taking control of this very moment. By choosing to consciously do gratitude regardless of our current circumstances, not only will we start to realize that we already have so many blessings, but we will also understand that our current circumstances, whether they're good or bad, act as the stepping stones to the next amazing thing that is coming our way. To put it another way, I always tell my audiences, I don't believe in failure. In fact, I have never once experienced failure. I only have stepping stones to success. Now, between you and me, I've had a lot of stepping stones to success. But I've learned to be thankful for those things, not just regret when something didn't go the way that I wanted it to go. It is the power of gratitude that instantly turns my perceived failure into a step forward in the evolution of becoming something awesome, as opposed to viewing my perceived failure as some negative or disappointing experience. Gratitude has the power to flip any perceived negative into something awesome. With active gratitude, you can flip failure into success. With active gratitude, you can flip hate into acceptance and love. With active gratitude, you can flip hardship and challenge into endless opportunity. With active gratitude, you can flip poverty and lack into prosperity and abundance. With active gratitude, you can flip tragedy and loss into a richness of hope. The process of flipping life's negatives into something incredible begins with a single decision. You must make a decision to examine the individual frustrations or challenges throughout the day exactly in the moment that they come up, and decide that those minor trials are no longer going to dictate your mood or control your day. You can have as many great days as you want to have. With the flip formula, you are the one who gets to call the shots. Life happens. Let's go back to that Harris poll for a minute. Why in the world are we so unhappy? Why do we not experience more joy and contentment in life? And what is the cause of such a sweeping lack of joy? My opinion? It's life. That's all, it's just life, and I'm not talking about the cereal. Life happens and will always be happening to us whether we want it to or not. And life is full of challenges, difficulties, tragedies, mistakes, failures, and so much more. I heard one of the greatest motivational speakers of all time, Les Brown, put it this way in a talk that I heard him give. He said, "If it ain't one thing, it's 12 others." You will never ever have a problem-free moment in life. You're either in a problem, just left one, or headed toward one. If you were to make a list of all the challenges you perceive yourself to be having this moment and in the past, can you imagine how depressing that would be? Obviously, creating such a list would not be healthy or helpful, and yet that form of thinking is the way most of us interact with life on a daily basis. We love to focus on the bad. It's almost as if we have somehow managed to bond together as human beings by comparing sob stories and communally complaining about our rotten, heaping piles of pointlessness. Think of the statements you hear or say on a regular basis. Things like, "Gas has gotten so expensive." If gas is cheap at the moment, you'll still hear somebody say something like, "Yeah, but I remember when gas was under a dollar." It will never be cheap enough if you look at it that way. You go to the movies and say, "They sure do gouge you on popcorn and soda," yet you buy it anyway, sulking at the money you're throwing out the window. A man I greatly admire named Joseph B. Worthland once put it like this. He said, "I believe that many people are unhappy because they've not learned to be grateful. Some carry the burden of bitterness and resentfulness for many years. Some pass their days as though suffering a deep sadness they cannot name. Others are unhappy because life didn't turn out the way they thought it would. If only I had money, some might say to themselves, then I could be happy. If only I were better looking, if only I were smarter, if only I had a new car, a college degree, a job, a wife, hair that wasn't so frizzy, or in my case, if only I had more hair or was 12 inches taller. If we only look around us, there are 1,000 reasons for us to not be happy, and it is simplicity itself to blame our unhappiness on the things we lack in life. It doesn't take any talent at all to find them. The problem is, the more we focus on the things we don't have, the unhappier and more resentful we become. How great is that quote, by the way, right? I love that. And seriously, I'm off script right now. I want you to think about that. How often do you focus on the bad versus focus on the positive? We totally do this thing where we get together, and if we don't know what to talk about, we talk about the bad weather or the bad boss or the bad job or the bad economy or the bad politics, and we focus on all that stuff rather than focusing on what we have right now that actually is in reality awesome. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox for a second. I mean, this whole book is kind of a soapbox, but let me just get back to the script. Life is coming at you whether you want it to or not. And the phrase, if only, serves but one purpose. It keeps you from enjoying the life you have right now. You know, today may very well be the absolute best day of your life. After all, you don't even know with 100% certainty whether you'll wake up tomorrow. I hope to help you turn your if only mindset into a I can't believe how good I've got it outlook on the life you have right now. Your new superpower. If you consistently apply the flip formula during key strategic moments throughout your day, I can guarantee that you will become happier and more fulfilled, and you can instantly regain control of your own life. I even have the science to prove it, and I'll share that with you after we discuss the formula. I love speaking to students. When I teach gratitude to students in junior high and high schools, I like to refer to active gratitude as their superpower. I do this for a few reasons, and let's use Captain America to illustrate. Marvel's Captain America was given a special serum that transformed his levels of strength, endurance, agility, speed, reflexes, durability, and healing to superhuman levels. All helpful qualities when fighting bad guys, no doubt. Well, what if Cap decided he didn't want to use his superpowers? What if despite all his super abilities and rippling abdominal muscles, he merely sat on the couch spooning some Ben and Jerry's? He would not be considered a superhero if he never used the powers he was given. Gratitude is the superpower that has been given to you. If you only give gratitude a slight acknowledgement from time to time, you won't be super either. The power of gratitude can be harnessed when we spring into action and activate the inherent power stored in gratitude. You become super and charge your world when you understand, use, and put active gratitude into practice. I recently received an amazing message from a friend who'd invited me to speak to a co-op group of homeschool parents and their students. Her 8-year-old son had really taken the simple and powerful message of flipping the gratitude switch to heart. The day after I spoke, the boy surprised his mom with a note that read, "Mom, thank you for making food, comforting me, driving us places, and being nice. Love you." So sweet. If that wasn't enough, I received another email a week later from the same friend who recounted the following. She said, "Last night, as I was laying with the kids in their room at bedtime, my 8-year-old said, 'Mom, I can't remember what I means.' I had no idea what he was talking about, so I asked him what he meant. He said, 'Well, I remember what F and L stand for, but I can't remember what I means.' He was going through or attempting to go through the flip process in his head. Thankfully, my voice wasn't affected by the tears that started rolling down my cheeks as we laid there in the dark talking about the process you shared. I've tried to teach my kids to be grateful. We play the gratitude games and things like that. But flipping the gratitude switch is powerful." By the way, when I got that email, I got teary myself. I thought, holy cow, what if this little boy can remember forever this amazing and simple power of gratitude? What could his life look like? By the way, I hope that that's what you're getting out of this as well. Okay, back to the script. I know how powerful this little flip can be for you, for your kids, and for the world, because I know how powerful it's been for me and my family. I've watched Flip change the lives of thousands of elementary and junior high school students and their counselors. I've spoke at large junior highs, and the message of Flip was so powerful that the counseling department decided to use the principles in this book as a continuing theme for the entire school year. I've watched Flip change the lives of high school students. The first high school that brought me in to speak was an incredible school in Oregon. After the talk, I received this Facebook message from a 16-year-old female student. She said, "Hey, I just wanted to thank you for coming today and talking to our school. I know you had a good impact on a lot of us, and definitely me in particular. Recently, I went through an abusive relationship that carried on for almost a year and a half. It's only been a few months since the breakup, but my heart has been over him for a long time. I was just too scared to leave. I just wanted to say that you said something today that hit me hard, and I know I've been struggling with it, but I just didn't know how to deal. It was this: why be bitter when you could be thankful for the learning opportunity? It really got me thinking that I need to use my experience in my past relationship as a learning and growing opportunity." When I got that Facebook message, I became emotional right away. I mean, I thought, what if this young lady's life could be changed forever because of one single flip? And what if she just kept flipping every day? I've seen entire company cultures shift by embracing and including the language of the flip formula into the fabric of their company. I've seen adults weep with gratitude after attending talks I've given at organizations and boot camps. These incredible people became transformed by this simple principle and started incorporating it into their lives and homes immediately. Now let me jump off script and just be real clear. I want to make sure you know, I'm not the one making the shift in these students. I'm not the one making the shift in the 8-year-old. I'm not the one making the shift. Me, Kevin Clayson, I'm not the one making the shift for these people that have heard me speak. It's not me that's doing it. I want to make sure that you know that I know that it's not me that's making the shift. It's the message. It's the simplicity of the flip formula and the simplicity of active gratitude that you do that's having the difference for these people. Okay, let me get back on the script. It's always so humbling and magnificent when someone applies these ideas, starts using the formula, and then tells me how it changed some aspect of their life. It makes me so thankful that I was inspired to use gratitude, to learn gratitude, and to share it with others so that it will hopefully impact the world as much as it has impacted me, and as I hope it will impact you. Introducing the new paradigm. What we're talking about here is far more than finding the silver linings in life's rain clouds. In fact, I take issue with that idiom. I'm making the case that there is no silver lining in a challenge because the whole cloud is made of pure gold. In the hustle and bustle of life and its many frustrations, let the following statement be the key to unlocking limitless joy and prosperity in your life. Here it is. It is the simple, daily, conscious decision to enact gratitude during the most frustrating times of the day, flipping the gratitude switch, that allows you to illuminate life's challenges, create more happiness, increase life fulfillment, drive more success, and ultimately deliver total control over all aspects of your life. Now, that was a good statement, so if you missed it, rewind and listen to it again, because it's powerful. Remember, when I began this journey, I was in a dark place. As soon as I started doing gratitude rather than just feeling it, I discovered my hidden internal switch. I felt so empowered because no matter how big a frustration was, I had a mechanism to deal with it. I eventually gave that mechanism a name, a face, and ultimately assigned a process to it so that it was portable, simple, and easy to share with someone like you. There are 4 simple steps to the flip formula that will deliver everything you need. Once you learn them, you will be fully equipped to tackle any challenge, hardship, or frustration in your life going forward. So let's go through the 4. The first one is F, which stands for find the frustration. The first step is the act of recognizing and responding to frustrations as they arise throughout the course of your day. When something frustrating happens, acknowledge it and realize you're being given the gift of initiating the flip formula. Step number 2 is L. Look for what's awesome. Now that you've located the frustration, isolate and analyze it for something awesome. In other words, find the good within the bad. Find the blessing embedded in the hardship, the joy embedded in the despair, the success embedded in the failure, and after a while, this search will become increasingly fruitful as you begin to notice more and more that you can consider amazing. Make a mental list of all these incredible things hidden in that moment of frustration. The next step is I, initiate gratitude. Now that you've located and isolated the frustration and found the good and the bad, you can choose to initiate or activate a process of gratitude for that hidden blessing. You take your list of what's awesome and you go through it mentally saying, I'm so thankful for, fill in the blank. That is what flips on the gratitude switch, and that is the moment when everything changes. When you activate the power of gratitude by initiating your gratitude sequence, you are basically looking that frustration in the face and telling it, thank you for being my teacher. Step number 4 is P, which stands for power up with gratifuel. Remember, hashtag gratifuel. Power up with gratifuel. Now that you've activated gratitude, you'll feel changed inside. Warmer, brighter, less cynical. You will have sparked a chemical release of what's known as the reward chemical, and your body will physically change, allowing the internal feeling you're experiencing